Hello, and welcome to the Inside Davies podcast for July the 8th, 2022. This is episode 118. On today's show, we'll be talking about driving the Rivian R1S, the Tesla supercharger network opening to non-Tesla vehicles this year, and second quarter production numbers from Rivian and Tesla. I'm Dominic Ioni, Inside EV's forum moderator and Inside EV's editor. Joining us today is the Chancellor of Charging, Tom Malogny, Inside EV's editor and host of the YouTube channel State of Charge. We also have the mystical Mr. Martin Lee from the EV News Daily podcast, which is available on all the best podcast platforms. And of course, Kyle Connor joins us from the majestic, practically palatial halls of the European offices of Autospec Studios, where he produces high voltage videos for a growing number of YouTube channels.
The Aloft Hotel. Beautiful.
The Aloft Hotel.
Yeah, wonderful.
Okay. Before we get going, I'd like to ask that you please subscribe to the channel. If you're watching us on YouTube, please hit that thumbs up button and ring that bell icon for notifications so you'll know immediately when a new video is published. Like, for instance, our first drive review video of the Mercedes-Benz AMG EQE that just went live a couple days ago. That's the 600 plus horsepower version of the Mercedes EQE. And you can check that out on Inside EVs. If you're watching us on Twitch, you can also ring that bell icon for notifications. All right, so with that out of the way, welcome everybody, and lots of good mornings here from our audience. I appreciate it. Nice to see you all with us. Okay, so we've got a pile of things to talk about today. Not really a whole lot in the way of news. I mean, there's a couple news items there, but really, Tom and Kyle, y'all been driving some great stuff this week. Martin, are you driving anything this week? Oh, your mic's mute.
I've barely driven a car this week. I tell you what, this kind of COVID imposed lockdown lifestyle means that I'd see these four walls more than anything else. I produce a podcast from home. My channel isn't really about reviewing cars. That's not my thing. It's not my expertise. It's about curating lots of things and data points and bringing them together for other people in an easy bite-sized thing. So that's what I do day in, day out. And the idea of leaving this room to go and meet the real people. Are there any? I see you guys. This is sounding quite depressing, isn't it? I've barely driven a car this week, but I did get sign off on from my wife on our next one. So if anyone's following the saga of what we're doing, we've had the MG ZS since October. Loved it. It's been good to live with a car and get to know it inside out. But always time for a change after that long. So my buddy Richard at RSEV, you guys have all met. He buys and sells EVs in the UK. He's going to put the MG into his showroom next week. And my wife has finally signed off on the big battery Kona. So we'll do a used one, about a year old. As you guys know, I like used cars. And I like shopping around and finding the right one. So that'll be next. I really lent hard into the Audi e-tron, having seen Kyle's videos of buying a used one and doing some road trips in it. I got some serious envy on watching those. But, my wife just prefers a slightly smaller car for the day-to-day. And our roads are a bit smaller. Car parks are smaller and stuff. She's more comfortable in a kind of Kona-sized car. So that's our news from this week. I'll let you know when we've bought one.
All right. So Tom's got had the pleasure of driving the Rivian R1S, and we'll talk about that in a bit later. Plus, he's took delivery of his Ford F-150 Lightning just after the show last week. So, really super psyched or hyped to hear about how that's been going. But Kyle, where are you right now? You're in Europe somewhere, but where specifically?
Yep. So right in downtown Stuttgart, and so in the home of Mercedes and Porsche all around here. Okay.
Right on. So last week we were talking about like weird cars that you might see in Europe on your trip. And we mentioned the Citroën e-Mahari, which I believe you found. I don't think you drove it, right? You didn't drive it.
Not yet. It has to get one part fixed and then I will be driving it.
Oh, really? That's cool. And yeah. Plus it was like you found it, you spotted it here and it's like with a whole pile of zero motorcycles, like an SRF. Zero
right, there's SRSs, SRFs, and it was at this charging station. We pulled in to charge at a Tesla supercharger, and it was at this hotel called the Kaiserhof in Anif, Austria. And I was like, what? There's a Citroen Mahari on here. And so anyway, met the owner. It's the owner of the hotel's car. He's a huge EV fan. He owned the first Tesla in Austria. He founded the Tesla Owners Club of Austria. He has a whole bunch of cool electric cars. Of course, every Tesla, but then like Mercedes EQV and this e-Mahari and a Kona and some other weird oddball electric stuff. And he's a huge Zero motorcycle enthusiast. He rents them to the guests so you can, while you stay at the hotel, go for a ride on a Zero. And it's all about promoting e-mobility. And he had this Mahari. It's available for rental. So we're going to obviously go and rent it from him and make a video. And yeah, can't wait to do it. They just need one part fixed.
Sweet. That's a great, that's like kind of amazing, but also kind of funny that it needs to be fixed. But so yeah, there's a bunch of other cars that you actually drove that I want to talk about, but you had another video on your channel this week. You can tell us which channel it was, but it's the Tesla Model 3 Performance versus BMW i4 M50. So that's the spicy Model 3 and the spicy i4 from BMW. So the BMW i4 has like been surprisingly good. I think people have really like been surprised about how much they like it, even in some situations more than Tesla Model 3. But you took them on some back canyon roads and just compare how they were like as a driver's car, which is what BMW is supposed to be, right? How they stacked up against each other. So I don't know. Yeah, take it away. Tell us what you found.
Well, first off, the conditions were not ideal for a performance back-to-back comparison. You know, this is, we're comparing a 100,000-mile Model 3 against a brand new BMW i4. You know, I thought, you know, to boil it down, because we don't need to go in depth, we did that in the video. Yeah. The Model 3 is the most insane performance car for the money in the EV world. You know, just insane acceleration, great aftermarket support, great reliability. It's been hacked. We can up the cooling. We can tinker around with it. Really, all you have to do to make a Model 3 really put down some crazy lap times is pads and fluid, KW suspension, or whatever kind of aftermarket suspension you need, because now the performances don't come with the upgraded suspension, and some good tires, and send it. It's great. The i4 is arguably a much better daily car. It's so much more luxurious on the inside. I really love the way this car cruises down the highway. It's got amazing driver assistance. Looks pretty good once you get over the grill. And I think, you know, when you start cruising on a back road at maybe 7/10, where like most people would feel like they're going fast, the car is great. But as soon as you start pushing it beyond its limits, when you really start trying to thrash it around, this is where it kind of falls apart a little bit, in my opinion. All of the inputs typical of modern BMW are just way too like bushing heavy. So much suspension compliance feels really heavy. The brake pedal's a brake by wire. It's tuned to like artificially to be way too, aggressive. And it was not great on a slippery back road. Now, if I had more room on a track at a higher speed, perhaps it would, you know, show a little bit better than what we found here in this test, but it just wasn't rear biased enough on the power distribution. It was very understeery, as most new cars are. And I thought, you know, back to back, getting out of one and into another, Model 3 is the one you want to have if you're a driving enthusiast. The i4, you kind of want all of the other time. And that's not to say the i4 is bad. The i4 still is an incredible car to rip around in. And I think Tom even mentioned that when he drove it in Germany, he got to drive it on some great roads and he was having a great time with it, as was I. It's just the Model 3 is definitely faster on a back road.
Right. Or a track, I would imagine.
It would be interesting to see on a track. That the room would help the BMW. It really needs some real, you know, high loads to work that chassis. It's got pretty good, you know, meaty tires on it too. So it would be interesting to see. BMW did not nearly, I don't know. Watch the video if you want all the nerdy stuff.
Yeah, it's a great video. I watched it. And it's funny, you're shooting this and it's like a huge windstorm coming in.
Sometimes we only have one opportunity to shoot a video and that was it.
Right. All right. So the next thing I wanted to ask you about was is not a car, actually. It's the Sortimo Innovations Park. So this is like a huge, you have a video on this on reviews?
Yep, on our Out of Spec Reviews channel. Yep, went up yesterday.
So this So the Sortimo Innovation Park is not a car. It's a park, a sort of. It's not even a park. You tell us what it is.
Yeah, it's basically a motorway rest stop right off of the Autobahn, but like the rest stop of everyone's dreams. And it is just the most insane place I've ever been. And it sort of happened randomly where we were here, we were reviewing a car, and a friend of mine said, hey, why don't we meet up at a charging station? I said, okay, well, this one looks good. They got plenty of plug-ins. And we pulled up and like, you know, it had this glow and angels were singing and it was just the most incredible place. Essentially 75-ish DC fast charging plugs, all with a minimum speed of 140 kilowatts, a full-scale restaurant on the inside, high quality, really nice, an office park upstairs, and they have experimental ones that can go up to 420 kilowatts that the buses have been charging on. It's so cool.
Wow. And there's also like a 35 kilowatt charging spots.
Right.
So
those are 140s, but on initial plug-in, they go to 35 and you get a cheaper electricity rate if you choose to hold it at 35, which is actually what I did a couple times because I was like editing videos in there. I'm like, I don't need any more. And then you can just through your app say, oh, I want 140 and it'll boost the power up and you pay a little bit more.
I haven't heard of that model before, but I really, really like it because
I love it.
Otherwise, you're relying on driving a car that can change, which no cars, realistically, you can't. So that's such a good model to say we've got enough chargers. You know, we're not limited by infrastructure. And as it gets busier, they will be. But to say, actually, we've got this really fast charger, but we will happily slow it down in return, giving you a better rate. Because, you know, if they've got a restaurant and a stuff there, I don't want, and it's happened to all of us. You know, you're on a charger and then you're like, oh man, I'll go move the car because I'm, you know, I'm not going to be that guy that sits on 98%. So, and then that's brilliant.
And the charging points are.
Yeah, it only works when you have extra capacity for cars. If you're trying, if throughput is your goal, this is not the best solution, but they have over 70 plugs and I only at peak saw three other cars.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, now.
Today, wait a few years. I love this model also. And what's great about it is even at 35 kilowatt, if you make a 45-minute stop, you're adding 100 miles of range. And, you know, Kyle and I do a lot of DC fast charge recordings. We charge up to 100% or 90%. But we do that just to benchmark like charging curves and things like that. Normally in driving, unless you're traveling many hundreds of miles, like maybe Kyle, because he drives crazy coast to coast, but many people, when they're on a long road trip, they don't need to fully recharge. They need to add another 70 or 80 miles to get to where they're going. So in this case, you could take the lower electricity rate, plug in at 35 kilowatt, stay there for 35, 40 minutes, you know, go inside. I'm sure there's amenities and so forth in there, Kyle, you know, grab something to eat or something. And you're on your way and you paid the lower rate. And, you know, it probably is better for your battery to not constantly blast it. If you don't need to charge at ultra high charging rates all the time, the 35 kilowatt is great.
Absolutely. And what's interesting, even beyond all of this, is just how the station gets its power. And I've done a little bit of learning since I shot this video. There's pretty much one totally load shared solution here. So there's one AC to DC thing. That's what's in this white building that we're looking at behind the highways here. And that can power any stall and any station pretty much at any rate. And so in theory, if you max the whole thing out, you may have to load share and derate, but that's like not really going to happen, especially if you have 70 cars there. Not everyone's going to be pulling peak the whole time. Pretty much you can just plug in. You can expect to get max power. You don't have to use a silly app to activate it. What you do is actually you plug the car in and it immediately initiates and starts a slow charge at 3 kilowatts. And this is to, you know, not have anything time out. It just gets the car working. Then either through an app or you can just go inside. There's like a little screen inside. You can say, yep, I just plugged in. It pulls up all of the numbers of the cars that just plugged in. So if you plug into number 310, you'll see a big 310 that says activate this charger. Swipe your card and boom, max speed right there. No apps, no fuss, works for anything. Because as a tourist in Europe, it is a pain to activate chargers. So, yep, they're exactly. They're rack-mounted 35-kilowatt rectifiers that can basically be spread across the entire unit, which is pretty cool.
Kyle, when I was just in Italy, I didn't, and I haven't tried to download apps and use them in Germany or Austria where you were. But when I went to Italy last month, it was super easy. I downloaded the NLX app. It worked. And I just used the NLX network like it was anything else. I had no issue at all. And I drove the same car that you drove, the Skoda Enyaq. I had it for a week in all around Italy. So I'm interesting to hear your thoughts on it. I loved it. It was like a premium ID4, you know, and I thought it was great.
Yeah, same here. And in Germany, that's definitely not the case. Like the ENBW app, the Plug Surfing app, the EVgo, but it's actually with a W, but Germans pronounce that EVgo. You know, these do not work in the US App Store. So I'm trying to think NLX. I haven't tried that one. I don't know how, if they are cross compatible here, but that might be the solution.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay. It could be. So yeah, so let's talk about the Skoda Enyaq. So that's another video that you have up on your channel. I mean, I think that's the only video that you've put up of the stuff that you've driven there so far. You have mentions of other things. Right. So
we've filmed a lot of different cars, some cool stuff. Can't wait to share with everyone what we've been driving. Just some, and we drove a 5 million euro car sideways around a racetrack, but we'll save that video for another time.
Ooh, was it electric? Yeah. No.
It was fully electric.
Oh, is that the AMG?
Yeah, so we'll save that for next week.
Okay. I can only think of one car that might be $5 million.
But... it's not what you're thinking.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Because you would have been jealous if it was that.
Right.
IDR?
Yeah.
Oh, man.
No, we'll talk about it next week.
Okay. I'm intrigued. So, yeah, Skoda. This is like the... the other Volkswagen's other brand of the I version of the i4 that we see, the VW i4, but under the Skoda brand, so it has a different look, a different face, a lot of the same workings underneath. I don't know, what'd you think?
Yeah, so it's the ID4's basically little brother in a sense, and Tom recently spent some time with this vehicle as well. And Skoda in past has always been, you know, sort of the cheaper but sort of smart money. They have cool little innovations. For example, this car has an umbrella holder in the driver's door, which is really cool, like a Rolls Royce. It has an ice scraper in the rear trunk. It's got really cool interior removable compartments and storage things. So it's all about smartness. However, this one was 65,000 euros because it was totally maxed out. So it's the all-wheel drive with the big battery. And but it's not the RS, it was just the 80X, but it had like this crystal grill that was a bit too much, I thought. So anyway, it's not how I would spec one. It was like sort of tick all the boxes, more expensive than an ID4, but honestly worth it. Nicer, looks better, the interior is far superior. You know, all around, you know, just like an ID4, but better from the company you would expect to make a worse one. It was really interesting. Yep, Simply Clever, someone just commented, that is their tagline.
Yeah, and I've seen more and more of them on UK roads as well. And I've owned a Skoda in the past. I had the Octavia RS, the one that when you lift the bonnet, it's got the Audi badge on pretty much all of the engine bits. And so that was a properly rapid wagon. That was an estate car. I loved that one back in my pre-EV days. And so I've been a big Skoda fan over the years. And they've made some really fast and interesting cars as well. But in an EV world with the Enyaq, the base model, you can get into the base model quite cheap. And if you are cross-shopping ID4 not so much the Audi Q4 e-tron because that is more premium, or the Skoda, you'd think, well, they're comparable. But the spec, they've really stripped it out. Whereas with the ID4, they've made it much more simple, a few options. And they've actually reduced it as well with the kind of the semiconductor shortages and things. They've really simplified. Skoda have taken everything out, and it's all on the options list. And as you say, by the time you put all the things on the car that you probably want, it's really, really expensive, and not what I would think a Skoda would cost. And I think that's going to be the Nissan Ariya's problem as well, because that's, what, £56,000, which is, what, $65,000. For the four-wheel drive big battery one. And it's these badges that you are not used to paying a lot of money for, all of a sudden have got really big ticket prices. That's probably why they did it with Seat as well, because you can't charge the money they want for what is, you know, that version of the ID3 with a SAIT badge on. Now, call it a Cupra, call it the Bourne, you might get away with it. I think they are. So the shift to EV has been fascinating, and it's really jumbled up what you would expect of a brand. But you're absolutely right there. They are a much better version of the ID4, which is vanilla. And that sounds like an insult, but that is perfect for so many people because the Skoda is a bit too interesting for some people. That's my take.
Interesting. I wonder, could Skoda actually outsell Volkswagen? I mean, customers have a choice,
not,
right?
Not as a brand.
No, they're going to make a bunch of Volkswagen stuff in Czech because it's cheaper to make it there. They're going to make a bunch of Volkswagen Group cars, which they've never done as many before. I think they picked the Passat there as well. But in an EV world, they're going to make more there. But I'm not sure they'll outsell the mothership.
Okay.
No, definitely not. Volkswagens are just on every corner here. Right. Even ID3s, ID4s. Mm. Yeah.
Right. I was thinking of the electric line, but is there a... There must be a Skoda version of the i3?
Not yet.
The ID3?
Okay.
Not yet.
Yeah.
ID3, ID3.
Yeah.
Okay. So, cool. So what else? Yeah. You also drove some Chinese cars that I don't think you have videos for them but you have them coming soon. I don't know if you want to talk about them now.
Yeah, certainly. We can touch on them very quickly. Sure.
Sure. Okay. So you drove the Arc Fox Alpha S. So that's kind of an interesting car. I mean, we have a picture of it. You shared on Twitter.
It's a car I don't really think anyone's familiar with in the U.S.
Right. Yeah. I don't think there's not a whole lot of mention. I don't think we've talked about Arc Fox. The weirdest name. I kind of like it, but you have to see it.
I just thought it was going to be like a garbage can on wheels with a name like that. There's a better way of saying that. I don't know.
It kind of looks like a small Model 3 in a way.
Yeah, I mean, like, I just, you know, Arc Fox. Okay, silly name. Maybe it's better in China, but it doesn't really translate to our market that well. But then I got up close and personal with the car, and I got to drive it, and I took it actually on a private testing track as well, and was really, really impressed. It is interesting. Some of the components in the car are complete knockoffs of Mercedes. Like, the infotainment system is like someone described MBUX over the phone, and then they put it in this car. It's really funny. But it works, and parts of it, and I dare to say most of it feels better and drives better than like a EQS. And it's very inexpensive in comparison. Like, amazing power, 400 horsepower. It's got 250 kilowatt motors, I believe. And maybe I'm getting mixed up, but it was very quick and, you know, soft and squishy as you would expect from a Chinese car. But just like sitting in there and cruising, my goodness, this might be a cruiser. The big downside is the charging, 100 kilowatt peak, if I remember correctly. So it's not really a road tripper. But if you're looking for a car in China that's kind of not well known, at least outside, that's very premium for the price and like actually is a good solid vehicle, surprisingly so, this is it. Massive backseat, of course, no surprise.
What do you think of this car, Tom? Any questions?
Well, I'd like to drive it. I think it looks pretty cool. You know, I don't doubt, you know, Kyle's impressions on it. You know, it seems like it's, other than the charging, it looks like it's a pretty good offering. And I just can't wait to get back to China and really do, you know, head-to-head comparisons of these vehicles. I was actually talking to a contact yesterday that invited me to come over the summer and said, basically, you know, we'd love to put you in a bunch of different EVs to make comparison, make videos, but you know, they just reduced the lockdown from 14 days in a hotel to 10 days in a hotel and then 3 days at like a private residence or something. Jeez. But it's still 7 days at the hotel and 3 days at the private residence. So it's still 10 days when you get there that you can do nothing but be sequestered, and you're not even allowed. They bring you food. You can't even choose what. So you're not going to get like bowls of like squid and stuff like that. I'm not going to be able to deal with that. So I had to decline it, but there's some really cool stuff coming out of China now. And as soon as we get the opportunity to go over there, I think I'm even going to team up with Kyle and the two of us will go over there as soon as we're allowed to, and maybe spend like 2 or 3 weeks there and drive everything there are, do videos, talk about his impressions, my impressions. We might collaborate on something like that, but It's great that he got the opportunity to drive that over there.
Yeah, I don't. It's not on sale in Europe. You know, Magna is a sponsor of our reviews channel, and they've done a lot of, I guess, contracting work on this particular car. I'm not sure of the exact extent, so I'm not just saying nice things about it because Magna had some involvement. They literally were. I was just like, "Oh, it's over there. Do you mind if I like take it out and make a video?" And they're like, "Oh, crap, go do whatever you want with it. So you want to drive that thing?" Like, yes. So yes. Yeah, it was surprisingly nice. Yeah.
Do we know what kind of batteries in it?
Yeah, I forget all the specs. It was like a 64 kilowatt hour or 94 kilowatt hour. And I don't know who makes the cells, but yeah, I mean, everything seemed okay, except the charge rate seemed pretty bad.
You don't know if LFP or.
Yeah, don't remember. Don't know if I even knew that. This was a little while ago. Yeah.
Yeah, you've been busy, man. Every day is like a torrent of cars and things going on your Twitter feed.
It's doing a lot.
It's called Connor.
It's Chinese car week for us too, because this is the iWays. We did that, and now we're just about to grab a Lincoln Co, which I'm really excited to experiment with.
An electric one?
So it's a plug-in hybrid, but it'll be a good taste of the brand and how their strategy works.
Okay. So Lincoln Co is a company owned by Geely, and they should have access to all kinds of great, EV components and things and parts, and I don't really
know. I wouldn't say great, because have we seen a great Geely EV yet?
Well, that's a good point. I mean, I'd have to start digging, because I'm not super familiar.
I hope they don't use Polestar 2 stuff, because that's like last generation tech. I know Volvo is working on their next generation stuff, which should be competitive, but I'm not sure what to expect from Lincoln Co. going into the future.
Right. Well, Geely had that 800 volt platform they were working on. We talked about last year, the C platform, I believe they're calling it, but I haven't seen it mentioned underneath anything yet. It's kind of bizarre to me.
I spent some time 2 weeks ago with Alain Visser. He is the CEO of Lincoln Co. And from my conversation with him, I'm optimistic about what they're doing, because he talked about how he's running a company within a big megacorp of Geely, but defends the, he runs the company as a startup within. So he's got all the financial protection and robustness of not struggling from month to month. But equally, the people he's hiring, the engineers, the designers, the way that Lincoln Co. are going about their business is very much like, well, hey, you've got access to the other stuff in the company if you want. And if you want to go do your own thing, you can go do that. I spent about half an hour with him doing an interview for something else. And I was very, very impressed with talking to their CEO. I thought that they had a great attitude to innovation and to working really, really quickly, a kind of Silicon Valley style attitude of move fast, break things kind of thing. But he was more reserved than, he didn't use that phrase. So I don't know. Again, I've not driven one, but from talking to the boss, I was impressed.
Yeah, they say that in Germany, 97% of their cars so far are on car share or like a subscription basis, which is just an insane number. And they're thrilled with it. I was like, oh, I don't know. Is that good? Like, you got to deal with these things when they come back. And they're like, oh, this is great. So I don't know. I got to do some more research. But I just got off the phone with them, and we're about to go pick one up here pretty much after this podcast to go rip around at top speed on the Autobahn with.
Right on. Yeah, I'm curious to hear about that. I like the styling of that brand, of Lincoln Co. a lot. But I was kind of disappointed they have even make gas. I always thought it was like an electric vehicle company, like right from the get-go, but apparently not. I was like, oh, what? Tailpipes?
Yeah, they only have one model here, at least in Germany, which is this SUV, which is sort of an adapted XC40 situation.
Okay. Interesting. Is it the same bodywork as the X40? XC40?
No, it looks totally different. You'd have no idea.
Ah, interesting. Mm-hmm. So you also, and we showed it briefly on the screen, maybe we can bring it back, the iWays U5. So this is the Chinese company, iWays. I'm not sure if you know their ownership structure. A separate company, an independent company?
Not sure. Just needed the car, Chinese car here, of course. And surprisingly, I think the only Chinese car that is more popular outside of China than inside.
Really?
Wow. Yeah. I've seen so many of these things around Germany, at least 10 of them. And
affordable.
they're affordable, and they look really nice, and they feel really nice. And like, I'm kind of impressed with this thing.
Okay. I mean, they're not huge, right? It looks like a small Model 3.
No, it's big. It feels way really? Bigger than like a Model Y on the inside. The back seats, you can pretty much stretch your legs out all the way. And wow. Yeah, seriously big. The one area in which it's really not great is the driving inputs. The accelerator pedal, brake pedal, the steering wheel is a rectangle. I don't know why they had to do that. The pedals themselves are like the seating position, like all the stuff I care about driving wise, not so right. great. But if you're looking just to have, you know, sort of a MG ZS competitor, if you will, this is seriously, I think overall a better package. Removing some of the driving stuff. I've never driven in an electric MG. I've ridden in one before, but this seems to be like the answer for inexpensive electric, perfect car for like ride sharing or Uber or something like that. Yeah, really, really impressed with this car, and just a whole nother level of nice on the inside. Really nice interior.
That's where the MG, the one that we've got at least, you can tell where corners have been cut. So for a very, very cheap car, it ticks lots of boxes. It's got a reversing camera, which is terrible. It's got some sort of leather style seats, which are just okay. And you know, everything for our, you know, if you, when you put the rear windscreen wiper on, or if it's on intermittent and it goes, you know, the fuse box is so close to you as a driver, you can hear the, what is it? Not the contactor, but the relay. Like you hear the relay go click, 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 click. And I'm like, I can hear relays. Like I shouldn't hear the relay of the rear windscreen wiper going click down by my knee. So you can tell where costs have been cut. But it's super cheap. So who cares? Like my wife doesn't care. So
do you have iways in the UK?
No, don't make right-hand drive yet.
Oh, okay. Soon?
Not that I've heard.
Okay.
But you know what was interesting about this whole iWays experience was it was the first car we picked up when we landed. Got off the plane, went straight there, basically. Actually, we had some Volkswagen stuff, but we went over here to pick this car up. And they were so transparent about everything. They were just like, here's our car. We understand, you know, this is our market position. Here's who we're targeting. Here's how we're selling them. We get there's issues here. You're going to see this bug in the software. You're going to see this thing. It's still kind of hilarious to drive in English, at least, because it's not adapted for any native English speaking audience. So all of the translations kind of half make sense. And so we got the biggest giggle going through all of the navigation stuff. Like if you want to open the trunk, you hit trunk on and then the trunk opens. And if you want to close it, you hit off.
Trunk off. All right. That's great. So I see. Anything else you want to talk about? That's all I have written down on my notes here, but maybe there's some other vehicles you want to mention to talk about?
We've been driving the Volkswagen's newest plug-in hybrid system and an Arteon Shooting Brake, which is the sport wagon everyone wants, but we can't get in the US. It's a gorgeous car. It sits very comfortably at 145 miles an hour all day long. And it has really good electric range. The most amount of acceleration I've ever driven in electric mode in a plug-in hybrid. We're going to have a video on it soon. It's very good and surprisingly efficient if you don't drive it at max speed.
What is the range?
Yeah, we're going to do an exact range test, but certainly enough. The problem here is if we didn't have charging cards, we haven't really been able to charge the dang thing anywhere because we have the charging cards in the iWays and our other EVs. I've been mostly just doing long road trips in the Volkswagen just to get places really quickly. And it's just been living with a dead battery. And then what I do is before we get to a de-restricted section of Autobahn, I'll charge the battery off the combustion engine, which is even less efficient, so that I have the electric boost to get me up to top speed. So not the most inside EVs friendly vehicle, sure. I should say.
Sure. But I mean, plug-in hybrids, people's daily usage, people who own plug-in hybrids in the States, at least, tend to, you know, not burn any gas. So it's almost like an electric vehicle, but.
Yeah, very, very common here too. We've spoken to a lot of people about plug-in hybrids in Germany specifically. Okay. So like a very large percentage of market share are plug-in hybrids, and a very large percentage of that don't plug them in because they just want to get the big tax incentive at launch. And then they're driving around with all that extra weight in there. Now, the big question is that actually more efficient than just a combustion vehicle, or is a hybrid probably the best approach for those people who will never plug in? This whole conversation of, yes, we need to go battery electric as quickly as possible for as many people, but there's still needs to make, you know, combustion engines more efficient. That's a big hole that I think a lot of people are not paying attention to at the moment.
Sure. Yeah, right on. All right. Anything else before we let Tom loose?
No, I want to hear all about this Lightning and especially the R1S from an R1T owner. Really curious.
Okay, let's start with the Lightning that we've got up on the screen here. So we're sharing a tweet from last week or update. My dealer called me to let me know that they had the software update from Ford and were updating my truck. 45 minutes later, I was driving her home. Thanks, Maple Crest Ford. So Tom, as the show was ending last week, you got a call that your truck was ready, but then a few minutes later, you were like, oh, it needs a, I don't know, you went down there and found out it needed a software update that it didn't have. I don't know. Walk us through that. What happened?
Can I just say, by the way, in the comments section, everyone thinks that was faked.
I know.
It was staged and faked, and it was like a kind of, oh my goodness, Tom's phone. Can you put that straight as well?
Yeah, I even had friends of mine that know me say, come on, you could tell me. You set that up, right? And no, totally did not set that up. I mean, you can even, if you really watch the video, you could tell, like, I'm looking at my phone because it's ringing, and I don't answer my phone when it's ringing during the podcast. But, like, the second or third time I looked, I saw it was my dealership. So I'm like, well, I better pick this one up, you know? And so that totally not staged. You know, you're going to believe us or you're not going to believe us, but that wasn't staged. And so right after the podcast, I head over there. Now my dealer said, you know, your truck's in. And then he asked me, do you want it today? And as you remember on the podcast, I was like, no, I don't want it today. Like, of course I want it today. So I ran over there and I show up and my salesperson's kind of like, I could see there's a problem. And he's like, man, he's like, I just found out we can't deliver it to you today because this is under the safety recall for the tire pressure monitoring system. Now, just I think a day earlier or 2 days earlier, 1 or 2 days before that, we just Inside EVs, actually, we were the first ones to post this story because I had spoken to Ford. I was on the phone with Ford when they were going to announce it. So they gave me the information before any other news outlet. What happened was they found out the Lightning with the 20-inch and 22-inch wheels, not the 18-inch wheels, had programmed the tire pressure monitoring system to activate at a lower tire pressure than what it's supposed to. I think it was supposed to click on at 32 PSI. And the way it was programmed, it wasn't going to turn on unless the tire pressure got under 28 PSI. So they viewed that as a safety issue because it wasn't going to notify you that the vehicle, you know, had low tire pressure. So there was a hold sale. So dealers could sell vehicles. They just couldn't let people take delivery of them. Now, I had a lot of people then say, see, this is why Tesla's so much better. They would just do an over-the-air update and boom, it would be done and it would be fixed. So you're right. But here's the thing about that. The Lightning has over-the-air updates, but this was just Ford just found out about it. Like they just realized it. They haven't made the software for the over-the-air update. So what they did was people that had already taken delivery of their Lightning had the option. You could bring it to the dealer and it's a 20-minute software update, or you can wait until the over-the-air update is ready. It's going to be in less than 30 days. We'll have it ready and then we'll push it out and you don't have to do anything. You'll get the over-the-air update. So I misunderstood that point of it. I thought owners had the option of getting the over-the-air update or having it done at the dealership. So when my salesman told me that, I said, well, no, I'll just opt to do over-the-air. Like, you know, I'm going to take the truck home today. And he's like, yeah, that's not how it works. We're not allowed to give it to you because it's on a safety recall hold. And that's the like federal law. Like we'd get like a $50,000 fine if we gave you the vehicle at this point while it's under, you know, hold. So I said, okay, I understand. I said, well, it's a 20-minute update. I wrote the article on it. And he was just like, yeah, but Ford hasn't sent us the software to do it yet because they just got this. in any event. So I left and I was like, okay, kind of bummer. I would love to have it for 4th of July weekend. And I drove home and like, I was getting all my paperwork ready. I called my insurance agent, added to my policy. I was going to the bank anyway to get a bank check because now I had the final amount and everything. So when he did call me, I'd be able to go right back and buy it. And so he called me back and was like, look, we do have the software. If you want to come back, we'll have it ready for you in like 20 minutes. So I was like, oh, awesome. But I had already put out a tweet that said, look, I'm here and I can't pick it up. So that's why I sent out this tweet to kind of say, look, all's good. They were able to update it. And that's how the safety recall works. So even Tesla, if you had ordered a Tesla and the same thing happened, they wouldn't be able to deliver the vehicle to you. If owners had the vehicle already, yes, they could keep it and wait for the over-the-air update to be ready, but they couldn't deliver the vehicle to the customer. So I just wanted to clarify that because I had a lot of people say this is why Tesla's better. In this instance, it really wouldn't make a difference. The only thing that could possibly make a difference is maybe Tesla would have made the update quicker. I don't know. Nobody knows. You know, could they have corrected that and pushed it out within a day, whereas Ford's going to take a couple of weeks. I can't answer that. But in any event, I have the truck. I've been driving it the last couple of days. It was a holiday weekend, so I had a lot of things planned. Actually, I haven't driven it all that much. I did drive it. The dealer delivered it to me at 90% state of charge. They had it fully charged for me. Well, that was, you know, the car shuts off at 90, and you really don't want to charge for 100% anyway. And on my first just driving around town, not range tests, just Tom Allegheny in his normal daily driving, mostly around town, on 90% charged, I went 292 miles. And that was down to zero. So, and I averaged like 2.4 or 2.5 miles per kilowatt hour, which is actually much more than I expected. Kyle averaged 2 miles per kilowatt hour in his 70 mile an hour highway range test, but that's at 70 miles an hour. The vehicle is going to be a lot more efficient at lower speeds. The kind of driving I did, and I had one pedal driving on, so I was really recuperating a lot of energy. And one of the things I really like that it has is the braking coach, where on every time you stop, it tells you how much of your energy was recuperated. Like, if you didn't use the friction brakes at all in that stopping incident, it'll say 100% efficient. You've recuperated as much energy as you could. Now, I'm pretty good with doing this. I've been driving these cars for a long time, but most F-150 Lightning owners are going to be first-time EV drivers. And I think that's great that it shows them and coaches them and helps them recuperate more energy. And it kind of trains you to not wait for the last minute to start braking. You know, ahead of time, you see there's a red light down there, ease up on that accelerator, you know, kind of let the vehicle bring you to the stop, and you're going to recuperate a lot of energy. It's a big, heavy vehicle. It has high regenerative braking that it can take in a lot of power. So I think that's part of the reasons why I averaged 2.5 miles per kilowatt hour in my first, you know, full tank, and did almost 300 miles, which is, for me, daily driving, at 90% state of charge, the thing went 300 miles. That's fantastic as far as I'm concerned.
How strong is the regen in compared to other things you've driven?
One pedal driving is damn strong. It actually is for such a heavy vehicle. Now, if you uncheck one pedal driving and then it just has like a standard regen braking mode, it's not all that strong. It's not free will coasting by any means. You know, you definitely feel the regenerative braking, but when you check the one pedal driving, it's definitely very strong. I guess if I had my way, I might select something in the middle. Like, I might have the Lightning default to the setting it does, but then let you check a box for stronger regenerative braking. But then if you really want the hard stuff, click one pedal driving. But it's not one pedal driving unless you check that box. It won't coast down to a stop and hold it. Now, there is a hold that's a separate button you have to check. So it will, you know, when you brake to a stop and stop, it will hold. It won't just automatically start, you know, artificial creep. But if you don't check that box, it will. It'll do artificial creep. So it gives people the opportunity to configure it the way you'd like to. But I'd like to have a regen setting in the middle of the two we have. Kyle, what did you think about that with the regen braking? curious.
So that setting is available. If you drive it in sport mode, you'll get another 25% more regen than freewheel coasting. But then you have to deal with driving in sport mode, which sharpens the throttle a little bit too much all the time.
It does. And you get a little bit of a herky jerky, you know, like it.
Yeah,
really...
it's not normal mode's the best mode for it. I prefer to drive the truck not in one pedal driving. It's the only one of the only electric vehicles that I actually prefer to have one pedal off. And that's just because of most of this calibration with one pedal driving. There's a half a delay with any input. So if you lift off the accelerator pedal, you get a sense of it coasting and then it hits the brakes. And when it's under regen, you hit the accelerator pedal, it takes a half a second for it to whoa, go. And in this process, I'm used to immediate responses. So I end up going a little bit harder down on the throttle just to wake the thing up and it spikes up. So it's not the most smooth thing. This, I actually did end up learning to adapt my driving style to its weird pedal mapping towards the end. I mean, we had it for 2 weeks or so, put a few thousand miles on it, but I think it's still best to just put it in normal mode, cruise, because anytime you hit the brake pedal, it's not like you're giving up regen. It's blended brake. It's a brake by wire. So you're getting the same amount of recuperation no matter what.
So it's interesting that what you talked about, I noticed that at very low speeds, but once I was up over 35, 40 miles an hour, I didn't get that sensation of that lag as much. Did you get it at any speed, or are you talking more at the very low speeds?
Yeah, it's certainly more pronounced at low speeds, but just try it. If you're coming into, you know, 40 miles an hour, lift off for a stoplight, for example, you'll just feel this coasting action for a half a bit. Then it kind of ramps up oddly. It doesn't smooth into its thing. It's just like Tesla does this so well. And it's like, just drive a Tesla and match their targets. It's like, I've been saying this for 2 years, but some people complain about it. Some people don't notice it or pick up on it. It just bothered me enough to not use one pedal driving.
Yeah. Well, I've been using it half and half just to, cause I'm trying to try out the different modes. And I completely agree that I felt what you're talking about at lower speeds. I didn't feel as much at the higher speeds, but now that you're mentioning that, now, of course, today I'm going to go out and drive it a bunch and really see how it feels at a little bit of a higher speed. I felt like it was pretty smooth once I got up over 40 miles an hour, but let me repeat that.
Yeah, and so, look, software updates can improve this too, right? Your truck's on a different software version than our truck was. So it could be something that they're fine tuning and adapting over time. We've seen this.
Yeah.
True.
So it's all wheel drive, right? So you've got two motors there. Are they the same kind of motors or are they different?
There's two permanent magnet motors with no disconnect, same exact motor, slightly different ratio on the rear. And the rear's got a little bit more of an aggressive ratio on it.
Because I was thinking, if you're trying to match different kind of motors and you're just fine tuning that software. So yeah, but they can nail that in time.
Yeah, I just think the way to do it for most people is you're not giving up anything with a blended brake. The brake pedal itself really isn't bad. And so just cruising along there is fine. As you hit the brake pedal, it'll give you all the regen it can. Once it's maxed out, it'll go to full friction braking.
So this is what size tires do you have on this, Tom?
I think they're 275 50s. I'm pretty sure 20-inch wheels.
20-inch, right? So this is a 300-mile range EPA?
324. So that's I have the Lariat trim. Kyle did range tested a Platinum that has the 22-inch wheels. So I should do better than what he did. I think he finished up, I think he did like 250 at 70 miles an hour and then drove it 10 more miles, Kyle. But I'm expecting to do a little bit better than 250, but we'll see. You know, that's why we do these. But I, in my first daily driving, just driving it normally, I did almost 300 miles at 90% state of charge. So it actually is better than what I was expecting. But it's, you know, weather's been good. The driving temperature has been good for range. And a lot of that was low speed around town, just running errands and stuff. And already I've done so many like truck things with it. I went and bought, 50 pound bags of sand. I threw 1,000 pounds in the back, and because I had my patio behind my house all pressure washed and cleaned, so of course that pulls out all the sand in between. So I had to resand my whole patio, and I'm finishing my basement, and I'm doing a lot of the work myself. So I had some wood that I clamped onto the tailgate. It has a slots where you could put in clamps, and I was ripping wood on the back of the tailgate. And I'm like, this thing's awesome. And I actually plugged my circular saw into the onboard power in the back. I didn't have to run an extension cord to my house. So, nice. I mean, like in the first week, I'm already doing all kind of cool stuff. Of course, dumb me. Like I didn't record any of that. I didn't take pictures of the sand in the back. I didn't record me, you know, using wood because I'm just like living my life. Kyle wouldn't be that dumb. He would have pictures and videos of everything and he'd have it up on Instagram and everything. But I sometimes forget that I need to document all that stuff. No, I did not have to sign a no sale agreement. So Eric was just asking that the way Ford is recommending dealers do that. But it's up to the dealer. Ford cannot tell the dealers to do that. And my dealership here, Maple Crest Ford in Mendham, awesome dealership. MSRP, no markups on Lightnings if you order them. If they have an inventory car, like if I canceled mine when I went to pick it up and said, I don't like this, they have it in stock, then they can mark it up. But no sale agreement, no markups. There's dealers out there doing that. I know in general, most of the dealers are marking these things up and it's been a lot of problems with people complaining about that online, but there are dealers you can find. Kyle always says you don't have to buy a car in the state you live or in the area you live. Get online, look for the dealers. I know it's hassle and everybody wants to do things the easiest way. You know, you want to go to your local dealer, buy the car, but you can find vehicles at MSRP even today if you're willing to do your homework. Now, you can't get a Lightning because they're sold out for a couple of years. And there wasn't a comment earlier up in the line that said, Tom, so do you like it? Are you keeping it? So, yeah, I am definitely keeping it. How long I'm going to keep it, that's a question. You know, I'm going to have it at least a year, and then I'll decide. I'm supposed to get my Rivian sometime in the fall. So I'm going to have at least 3, 4, 5 months where I have both vehicles, and I'm able to decide, do I want to sell one of those, or do I want to sell the Model 3 and have two pickup trucks in the household? We'll see. I'll tell you, the more I'm driving this, the more I'm thinking I'm going to keep it because it's what a great driving electric vehicle. I mean, I'm not used to having something so big, but what a smooth, quiet, it's quieter than the Rivian by far, in at least my experience so far. The cabin is like, you know, just such a quiet, and it kind of reminds me of like the old cars from the 70s that used to float along on the highway. You know, we had a 72 Oldsmobile Delta 88 that was like 3 feet long. And it reminds me of that driving experience, just kind of floats, you know, over no matter how big the bumps are, it you don't even feel it. It just eats them up. And yet it's got that, you know, you stomp on it and it launches like a rocket. But one thing I'm not crazy about acceleration wise is when you, especially at lower speeds, if you're under 50 miles an hour and you really stomp on it, you get like torque steer from the front wheels because the truck lifts up and launches and the front wheels spin. I get wheel spin, little wheel spin up to 40 miles an hour. And, you know, the front wheels want to pull you in the direction you're in. So you really have to make sure you're dead on straight and you're holding the steering wheel tight, or it's going to pull you like a front wheel drive car does. And I think that's something that Ford can definitely tweak a little bit and improve.
Right. That's interesting.
Yeah, totally agree. The problem is they have the same front motor with the rear motor. So there's really no primary or secondary axle in this case. And that's not the right way to set up the car, in my opinion. I really think they should have gone with a primary rear drive axle, typical pickup truck style. When you hit the accelerator pedal, especially with a truck with the weight balance as good as this, with the battery pack making it much more 50-50, juice the rear motor, let the front motor come in. Another thing they can do to help this as well is Ford definitely targets maximum acceleration when your foot hits the floor. I think an interesting strategy, perhaps maybe just in normal drive mode, would be to have it ramp up. So that would mean give the rear motor everything it can, and then just a few milliseconds later, blend in the front. This would, A, give you the impression that things are building and happening as your foot is to the floor, which is a very pleasing feeling to a driver, but it could also help reduce some of that initial hard wheel spin it gets from that big acceleration hit on the front axle.
Yeah, but I mean, all this they can change with software. They can tune this. They can definitely improve that if enough people comment on it. We know Ford watches the Inside EVs podcast, so you know, maybe they're making a little notes about this. But hey, that's just me. That's how I felt. It just felt a little. No, actually, it's not just me. I let a friend of mine drive it, and I was like, you know, we got the. You know, I live in a very rural part of New Jersey. There's not a lot of traffic, not a lot of cars. So we're on a straightaway, and I told him to slow down to like 20 miles an hour and just stomp on it. And he did, and it happened to him. And he was like, oh, like wow, that's like a little unnerving there. And I'm like, yeah, I forgot to tell you, you know, make sure the wheels are dead straight and pull and hold on to it, or it's going to try to pull you, you know, in what direction. He's just like, and this guy's owned. That's one thing that's great. A lot of my friends out here, I live in a farming area, Chester, New Jersey. There's farms everywhere. Everybody has pickup trucks. And so all my friends have pickup trucks, every kind of pickup truck. And one by one, I've been letting them all drive it. And like two of my good friends now have put deposits on the Silverado EV. And the Silverado. Now, I've warned them. I'm like, you're not getting that for like 2 or 3 years. They're like, yeah, but like, I'll wait like that. I think that's the direction to go in, you know, and they're, you know, like a lot of things, people are like loyal to brands, you know, they're Chevy truck guys. So, I think I sold two electric pickup trucks just for letting people check out this, the F-150 Lightning, which is all good. It doesn't matter the brand, just get into a plug-in and, you know, you're going to like it.
You may not have recent experience of a combustion F-150, but I'm really curious as to how it compares, because the pricing, they say the pricing is where it is because it shares all the same bits, but it doesn't, obviously, because it's got a big battery pack underneath it and independent rear suspension and lots of goodies. And I'm really curious as to how word will spread in the truck community in terms of when these start to filter out into kind of the wider world of how much... kind of, I'm loading the question a bit, but how much better is the F-150 Lightning from a comparable F-150 if you're cross-shopping both and you're a regular truck buyer, not a sort of super EV nerd?
So I want to see Kyle's opinion first before I answer.
Yeah, I mean, their production's going to outweigh, and like, or I should say, they have enough demand for this truck where it doesn't really matter what the truck crowd thinks. Whoever's putting their money down goes for it. The traditional truck guy, there's I would say multiple groups of truck owners, and you know, you'll have certainly a large percentage of them say, hey, look, I have a truck to do utility things with, to do towing, to just beat around it, to not have to worry about it. The truck works for me. With a battery pack in a vehicle, you kind of have to work for the truck a little bit. You got to manage your charging. You got to take care of this. You can't leave it full for too long. Can't leave it dead for too long. It becomes a bit of a hassle. And that crowd isn't going to switch to electric for years and years and years to come, but they don't need to. Doesn't matter. It's all about, you know, every single F-150 Lightning that can ever come off the line will have a home very quickly, even if it's just for the sheer fact of cost of operation in comparison to a combustion F-150. The fact that it's pretty much the same price as a base F-150, but you get a 100 kilowatt hour battery pack on the standard one, it's the best new vehicle value in the entire automotive industry globally, I would say. Just an insane smash into the world. And honestly, there's no convincing we have to do to get people to drive this truck, because it already does it for as many as they could build for the next 5 years.
Yeah. And so, Martin, you asked me, you know, about experience. So just this week I drove, a friend of mine has I think it's a 2020 F-150. It's not a brand new one. But you know, it keeps it really well. It's not really a work truck. And like people here, that's their cars, you know, these full-size pickup trucks. I know, Martin, for you, that's just insane. But that's just normal life. So I went for a drive in it just to feel what it feels, so I can compare it. And I asked him if I could just, you know, go for a spin. And it's totally different driving dynamics. I mean, I know that's, people are going to say, well, duh, it's electric, you know, compared, but it just feels completely different. The way it handles, right, the way it rides, everything about it feels completely, completely different. I mean, the Lightning to me, and I know I'm biased because I'm an EV guy. It's such a superior driving experience that I think almost everybody that gets in an electric pickup truck that drives it will be like, yeah, this is just better than what I'm used to. I want one of these. The one caveat is if it can do what you want it to do, there's limitations. We've seen tons of towing videos out there so far. And yes, if you need to tow a lot of weight, long distances frequently, it's not the pickup truck for you. But Kyle said that's okay because they're going to sell a million of these things, as many as they can sell. You know, and it doesn't have to do everything for everybody. But you know, if let's say I had a boat and I wanted to go to the Jersey Shore, 75 miles from here, it would handle that just fine. You know, but you know, towing 8,000 pounds, 800 miles twice a month, it's not the right truck for you, and that's okay. It doesn't have to work for everybody, but there's plenty of use cases, plenty of, like, my friends around here that have pickup trucks are plumbers or contractors. They work within a 30-40 mile radius of where they live. And, yeah. And, you know, they can do anything with this thing. For crying out loud, I mean, I pay a little under 15 cents a kilowatt hour for electric. This thing cost me at home $18 to fully charge. It, you know, and for that, I can drive 300 miles with it. You know, what does a diesel F-150 today cost to fill? It's got to be $125, right? No,
well,
it'll
they don't
go
make
further.
The diesel anymore, but yeah, I mean, a regular combustion one. Yeah.
It's got to be $125.
It'll it's go all further. About, it's all about the dollars and pennies, but also, like, a lot of people, a significant portion of truck people, like Tom was saying, don't tow long distances all the time. That's really the only thing that this isn't better at other than charge time. So anything long distance, with or without a load, if you're not doing big distances in your truck, this is just better in every category. And on that topic, actually, I think today or tomorrow, I don't know when it's set to go live, we have a video where we raced the F-150 and the Lightning across the Rocky Mountains with towing loads. So two trucks pulling into charging stations. And guess what? Just spoiler, so you don't have to watch it. It was a total disaster. One of the worst electric driving experiences I've ever had. Every single charging station had chargers down, not working. We went to one station that had four Electrify America stations. Only one was working. And you know, it was just a total, absolute disaster. And the moral of the story was, like, look, if you depend on your truck, you can't depend on the charging infrastructure. So buy a gas one. And I hated that to be the conclusion, but that's what it was.
Right.
And there's going to be instances where you're right. For some people, it's better. You know, currently a gas or diesel truck is better for them for their use case. And that's fine. Like I said, if Ford could pump out a million of these a year, then it might be a problem, but they can't. Like, they're going to make 35,000 of them in 2022. And then by the end of 2023, they're going to be at 100,000 annual capacity. So they're not going to make 100,000 in 2023. They're saying by the end of the year, they'll have the capacity to make 100,000. So let's say, you know, 60, 70,000 of them next year. So in 2 years, they can only make 100,000 of them. I mean, you know, they sell a million pickup trucks a year. So, you know, that's it's 5% of their pickup truck capacity. So it's totally fine. So yeah, Dominic just, or Martin just threw up my tweet that I tweeted yesterday. I got a delivery from the Charger Ferry. They put it under my pillow last night. And I had the Charge Station Pro got delivered. It wasn't available with the vehicle. These are going to be, you know, delivered with the vehicles once they have enough of them or make them fast enough. Don't forget the Lightning just launched. So that's actually gets delivered by Sunrun, not directly from Ford, because Sunrun is Ford's partner for installation for Charge Station Pro and also intelligent backup power system. But as I've always told everybody, you don't have to use Sunrun. You can if you want to. There's nothing wrong with Sunrun, but you have the option of deciding who you want to install your Charge Station Pro and your Ford intelligent backup power system. If you want to get Ford intelligent backup power and not have Sunrun install it, you buy it from Sunrun. They ship it to you. It's $3,100, I think, or I forget. I might be confusing. It's $3,100. And then you can install it, you know, yourself if you're a qualified licensed electrician. Tom, do you have 300 amp service at your house? So no, I don't. I currently am pretty maxed out with all of the circuits I have in my garage right now. So I'm going to be doing a full service upgrade. I'm actually talking to a number of companies, and QMerit is a sponsor of my YouTube channel, State of Charge. And what their specialty is installing home charging stations, home stationary energy storage, doing service upgrades, all that stuff. So they're actually a perfect partner for me because they install that stuff. And what do? I review it. So we're actually working on a deal now where I think we're going to do a full service upgrade at my house. Number one, I'm going to, you know, make sure I have enough capacity. Number two, install stationary or energy storage. And number three, install Charge Station Pro with Ford's backup intelligent power system. Make videos on all of them. And then I'll have, you know, my and also a new smart home electricity panel. Not just a dumb panel with individual circuits. The whole panel can power share and load share. So, you know, it's I have a lot of really good content coming up this summer, all about upgrading your home to accommodate home charging stations, doing the vehicle to home, you know, power flow and all that stuff. So, but that piece that you see right there, that's going to be in the middle of everything, because that's, you need Ford Charge Station Pro to be able to have Ford intelligent backup power, because that's right. the go between your vehicle and the inverter and disconnect switches and all that stuff that's needed to power your home with your Lightning.
I look forward to watching that.
And it's got a CCS cable.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it needs that, because a lot of people have asked me about that. When you're charging your F-150 Lightning with the Ford Charge Station Pro, it only uses the J1772 part of CCS. The AC connect part. But when you're sending power from your home to your house, that's in DC because it's stored in the battery. It uses the CCS pins on the bottom. So there's actually two electrical feeds that come from your house to Charge Station Pro. You need to run two feeds. You only need a 50 amp circuit from your panel from intelligent backup power to Charge Station Pro to power your house, because it can only deliver 40 amps. But then if you want to use the full 80 amps that it can charge your car at, you need to have a 100 amp circuit going to the back of Charge Station Pro. So it's going to actually have two feeds from your home electric service, not just one that you would normally have if it was just a charging station. So, and that's important because, and I know we're getting into the weeds here a little bit, let's say you don't have the capacity to add a 100 amp circuit and you don't want to do what I'm doing and upgrade your whole house's service panel. Let's say you can only put in, you can only spare 30 amps from your house. You can run a 30 amp circuit from your panel to Charge Station Pro. Now it'll only charge at 80% of that, which is 24 amps, but you'll charge your truck at 24 amps, but then you run the 40 amp circuit for intelligent backup power, and it'll backfeed, more power to your house than what it can charge. But a lot of people misunderstood how this works, and it's Ford's fault, because Ford said on their website, you need a 320 amp electrical service to be able to use intelligent back or to be able to use Charge Station Pro. And it was completely wrong. That was what would be recommended. And I actually called Ford and said, you know, this is crazy that it's required to use this. And, they said, no, that's not. Ryan, actually, that came on our podcast, was the one that explained it to me. And I'm like, well, you need to update this. Literally the next morning, the website was updated. So don't stress out. You don't need a 320 amp service. You only do if you want to charge your Lightning at the full 19.2 kilowatt that it can accept. And honestly, it's overkill for home. You don't
really
charge at 80 amps. No. You know, you only need to replenish what you use that day. So right. I know everyone's like, well, it's 130 kilowatt hour battery pack. You know, 32 amp feed won't even fill it in the morning. Yeah, if you drained it down to zero, it won't probably fill it up overnight. But how many days are you going to go down to zero and then the next day need to go down to, you know, drive it another 300 miles? So for most people, honestly, 40 amp to home charging is 40, maybe 48 amp if you want to get that, is really all you need. Don't upgrade your service just to squeeze out another 5 kilowatt to your EV. It's right. Just not necessary.
Hey Tom, so we're really hard up on time. We're already like an hour and 10 minutes. So we need to hear about the Rivian R1S.
Oh yeah, sorry.
It's all right.
Yeah, we didn't even get to news. It's just the Kyle and Tom show today. Like the, what have you guys been doing all week?
We can do the news part really fast, but we want to hear about this R1S. So
there's a comprehensive first drive review up on Inside EV. So, you know, whatever we don't fill in here, you can really get there. General, like high level overview, because I know we have to get to the news. I was surprised, and maybe I shouldn't have been, but I was surprised that it drove better than the R1T. Now, I thought it might a little bit, but and honestly, like it felt a lot better. And it's got a 14-inch shorter wheelbase, and that's really what made the difference. So much more maneuverable than the R1T. And if you look at it, you'd be surprised. It's 16 inches shorter than an R1T. It doesn't look like that to me, you know.
Right.
And the wheelbase is 14 inch less, and for off-roading. It just felt so much more maneuverable. Now they, Rivian had the first drive set up on a course that we would make these tight turns. You know, they know, I mean, the car manufacturers always do this. They cater the courses to the vehicle that they have, you know, in the first, when I did the R1T drive, they didn't have us making extremely tight turns off road like they did with this, because it might struggle with that. And it's one of the reasons why Jeeps are so good off road. They have this short wheelbase and they're super maneuverable. But, you know, other than that, it's got the same powertrain. It's got all the same driving modes. Like, it's hard for me to sit here and explain how much different it was than the R1T, other than to say it's a lot more maneuverable. It's got the same punch, the same power. It was unfortunate. I was on the first wave of the R1S drive and it poured like crazy for like 5 hours before we went to the course. So much so that the Rivian reps told me like on the side, they're like, we're like worried that you guys won't even be able to do this course today because it was like flooded the course. And so they actually cut out a whole section of the course because that section, the road was angled, and they're like, we're afraid the trucks are going to slide off the road and just like roll down the mountain. So we didn't get the full off-road experience, and it was just a complete mud pit. And everywhere we drove, it was a foot of mud. And, you know, it was fun, you know, kicking up mud and everything, but you see some of the videos of some of the, first drives that happened after ours, the next 2 days and then 5 days later. And I wish I was on those tours because the course was so much, they could do so much more than what we were able to do because everything was just like underwater and flooded. When we did, there were sections of the course where you couldn't see where the big rocks were because it was, you know, just flooded. It handled everything, you know, like just, yeah, I can't say enough about R1S and R1T on the courses that I've been on. Kyle's done some extreme off-roading with it. Obviously, we wouldn't be doing that on press drives. But everything that I've put it to the test to, which is probably as far as I would be comfortable off-roading the vehicle, I'm not a huge off-roading guy, it handles it and just with aplomb. Like, it doesn't even sweat on stuff that I know I'd be working it if I had a combustion engine off-road vehicle.
So this is a three-row SUV. I think it's the first electric three-row. Well, I guess the Model Y's got the pop-up two seats. Yeah. But how was the back row, the third row in this?
It's pretty roomy. You know, it definitely, you know, adults can sit back there. It's not, you know, enormously room, but, you know, adults can. It's not just for kids. And just so you know, Rivian initially intended on making it in a 5-seat and a 7-seat configuration. They have abandoned the plans for the 5-seat, at least for now. You can only order it in the 7-seat configuration. And the hatch, which you saw before, one of the things that's cool about it is it's got a little bit of a tailgate, and the tailgate is very short. It's only about maybe 14 inches. There, you could see him pushing that up there. And it's kind of weird looking, but I wondered why they didn't make that a little bit higher. But the reasoning is that it's like the perfect length for a seat. And then the hatch sticks out over you. So if it's raining, you could sit there and stay dry. And also for people that are short, they don't have to reach over like a huge tailgate to get stuff out of the back. So there was a lot of thought into how wide that tailgate would be, as opposed to how tall the you know, the hatch is. And I think they nailed it pretty much with that. Go ahead.
And with the change of size of the vehicle, does that change the battery specs?
No. That same battery, same powertrain, everything's exactly
the same. But you can't option the Max Pack in the R1S.
So there was some talk about that, but it sounds to me like you can't option it now. Kyle is correct. But it sounds to me like unofficially that you might be able to at some point in the future.
Nice.
Okay. That's so good. And out of interest, Tom, why? I love that you drove it. But why are they promoting it? I love Rivian, and I want to see them make a success of it. They've got so many problems on their list of things to work through. They're making, I've not read the news story that's coming up. I think it's 40 to 50 of them a day, or maybe that's a week. But you know, they've got such issues with ramping the R1T and then sorting out those snags, which are inevitable. Tesla had them. Why are they moving so quickly to this second vehicle? Because my cynical old British brain is always looking at things like this and think, are they just pumping the next thing? Because now they're a public company. Or is there genuinely a reason that they're going to be like, okay, we're going to move some production capacity to this. We're going to start delivering them rather than, oh yeah, you can't get one for, you know, the next year, but hey, journalists, drive one. I'm probably being a little bit cynical there.
My guess is that they just don't want the journalists complaining that there wasn't a launch.
Okay.
I think, you know, they are, they're going to start delivering them in late August, early September, Martin, to retail customers.
Well, that's so great. That's the answer I was looking for. So yeah, it's great.
Yeah. So they've been delivering them to employees like they did with the R1T first. So there's some employees that have them. So they're starting to deliver them in August and September. But your point is well taken about, you know, can't they just sort things out with the R1T and start, you know, blasting those things out first and make tons of them before they do this? I think part of it goes back to their original forecast and plans that they promised investors and they told customers, you know, the R1S is going to launch right after the R1T. We're going to, you know, and now if they pull back on that and say, well, you know, with all these supply chain problems with our manufacturing issues, we're not going to launch the R1S until 2023. You know, I think that you'd have a lot of complaint. You'd have investors saying, you know, you bait and switch, and you'd have, you know, all of us saying, oh, Rivian, now they can't even make their second vehicle like they promised. It was delayed from last year. Now it's delayed till next year. You know, it's starting to sound like the Cybertruck. Is this thing ever going to happen? So I think that they probably, if they had their choice right now, they'd probably wait, but they are feeling pressure from investors and just the whole community, people that plunked down their money years ago and said, you know, you were going to deliver this truck to me in early 2022, and now you're pushing it to 2023. You know, what's wrong here? So I think that's probably part of it.
And then something that we talked about on the podcast a long time ago, which viewers won't remember, is they made this promise of 3,500 DC fast chargers by the end of 2023. And certainly Tom and I laughed at that and said, I mean, with you can have all the money you want from your IPO. You just literally can't employ enough people to get land, permitting, landlords, power supplies. You can probably get enough of those chargers built physically by the end of next year. But that's crazy talk. We saw through that straight away. And then the news this week is this has quietly just disappeared from their website. Which is sensible, because I like sensible. I want companies to make a profit, to make great cars, to make lots of them. And like I say, to be profitable companies and to be realistic. And that's long-term viewers know that's what I hate about Tesla. It's like, I love the cars and the product, and I hate the BS and the nonsense around it. And this was nonsense. This whole kind of, hey, we're going to have 3,500 chargers. No, you're not. In a million years. Like, Tesla have put in years of hard work on their supercharging network. And it's fabulously difficult and lengthy, and even planning. I mean, your planning departments might be different to ours, but even the idea of, oh, we found a site. It's near power. It's a mile off the highway. We've got a great landlord. We're not paying them a fortune. And now we're going into permitting. And like, we'll see you in 12 months' time. And I think that has slowly got. So I know what you mean. Like, there was a lot of big promises which is not a problem. I'm not an investor, so that's fine. But it's like, just deliver the basics, and I think you'll be applauded for that. Maybe a bit like Ford have done, which is right. Here's some trucks, and now we're making them.
Yeah, when we were on the R1T drive, that, you know, was talked about, and I have to admit, like, I literally laughed out loud when they said that, and then I felt bad because I'm like, I'm insulting them, you know, like, and sometimes I'm dumb and I talk out of turn or whatever, but, and I followed the laugh up with, listen, guys, there is absolutely no chance that you'll have 3,500 of these in the ground and operational by 2023. Just walk that back now early on, because you're going to look foolish back then. And I'm not just throwing this out there. I've talked to infrastructure professionals. I've talked to people from utilities. I've talked to Electrify America ad nauseum about the challenges of getting these things in the ground. And the fact that, you know, if we had a national electricity supplier, we had like one electrical supplier that they could make a deal with, and that would eliminate so much issues. But there are thousands of utilities in America, thousands of independent utilities, and you can get a site selection, and you can work out the deal with the landlord, and, you know, you can do all the, you know, permitting and all that stuff, and then the utility is like, how much power? Hell no. Like, you know, no, right? You know, like,
no, not happening.
Okay, if you want it, you know, it's going to be $500,000 just to bring the power to that site before you even start doing anything else. So, you know, there's so many components to installing high-speed DC fast charging infrastructure. And I was kind of, as I said, afterwards, I felt bad when it was all over, because I was like in front of all the other journalists laughing at them and telling them, there's no way that's going to happen. It's folly. Walk it back right now. And, you know, they want to be respectful and not tell me, no, you're wrong. You know, we're going to do this. They're just kind of nodding their heads. And as I'm rambling on and on, telling them how stupid they are, I'm starting to realize I look like an ass in front of everybody. Like, everyone's looking at me and I'm telling them, you know, you're never going to do this. Don't do it. But I stand by that. I just probably should have spoken it a different way, you know, and been a little bit softer. Yeah, I mean, they'll get there. But, you know, 2023 is folly. You know, I'm thinking 2025-ish for 3,500, something like that. But they started installing them. Kyle was at the first installation of their DC fast charging, the Rivian Adventure Network.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, Kyle was just at one like last week. I don't know if it was the first one or the third one or whatever. But, you know, they're starting to proliferate now. But, you know, it's going to take them some time. It's super hard. And that's not saying that they're, you know, foolish or whatever. It's just so hard to do this. And I think they underestimated how difficult it would be. They certainly didn't want to make a statement on something and then not have it come true. They're professionals that probably their engineers said, oh yeah, we can do this but in this time frame, but that's right. Just not happening.
Just make the vehicles. Just be a really good vehicle maker.
And plus, when they first made the original promise, then COVID happened, right? So that everything kind of changed too. So
no, that was 2021. That was a March 18th of March 2021. That tweet of, hey, we're going to do this. So that, you know, you're a year into COVID of that.
Okay.
Yeah. But, I mean, supply chain problems weren't like they are now, and that's made it worse. But still, even under perfect situations, they weren't going to hit those numbers. It's kind of, and that's, you know, part of the problem I think that Rivian's having is not hitting goals, not hitting targets. And people don't like to see that they had to cut their production estimates in half, you know, for this year. You know, they're not going to hit their goal on that. They had to raise their prices significantly, you know, like, and there's people that are, some people are saying that this was a plan from the beginning, that they were announcing prices lower than what they could possibly sell it for. And they were intending on raising the price after the IPO. And that's not me guessing that. That's Rivian employee. One employee actually alleges that in a lawsuit. And Kyle and I have said from the beginning that we don't understand how they could sell these vehicles at this price, because they're too cheap for what the technology that's baked into the price. So that leads you to believe that, yeah, maybe they had that planned. I'm not, again, you know, insinuating that that's the case, but at the original price point, it was a hell of a deal. And I know it's hard for me to say that, because a lot of our followers here and our viewers can't afford $180,000 vehicle. And they say, Tom, how could you say that's cheap? It you have to look at what's packed in the vehicle, and then you can say, yeah, at that price point, it's a really good deal. I know we have to get onto the news, Dom, but
that's okay.
If you want to learn more about the R1S, check out our post on Inside EVs that talks about my first drive experience.
And just to remind people, there will be a more affordable version with a smaller battery of this coming out eventually at some point. So
yeah, the dual motor.
Right. Did I say small battery? No, dual motor instead of four motor. I was going to ask, how was the cabin noise inside compared to was it same as the R1T or?
I haven't driven the R1T in a little bit, and it seemed a little quieter to me than the R1T. You know, when I did the range test on the R1T here in New Jersey, it surprised me. It sounded a lot noisier than the R1T did when I did the first press drive the year before. It was the last time that I drove it, but it was a windy day, and it was a lot louder in the cabin at highway speeds than I remember previously. So I don't know if that was indicative of the build on the vehicle that I had, or if it was just the high wind, but the R1S that we did on the first drive seemed quieter.
Okay. Well, so there wasn't anything in the way of car reveals or big news this week, but we did find out that the Tesla Supercharger network in the US could be opened up to non-Tesla vehicles sometime this year. And since the year is already more than half over, that's not very far away. So, of course, we've known this is coming, and we've talked about this already, but happening to some extent in some European countries where they're doing some trials. But now we're talking about it here today because a White House fact sheet touting $700 million in private sector spending on electric vehicle infrastructure mentions Tesla in its plans, among other things. So it says, later this year, Tesla will begin production of new supercharger equipment that will enable non-Tesla EV drivers in North America to use Tesla superchargers. So, and on top of this, Twitter user Marco RPT Tesla, who bills himself as the top supercharger sleuth detective in North America, he posted an image that seems to show the front page of a report about a project involving supercharger charge post V3/V4 dual. So V4 is thought to be version 4 of the supercharger for CCS. So that's happening pretty soon, it looks like. I don't know.
It works well over here. It works very well on the app. And I think there's 14 or 16 sites in the UK. No, they haven't been overrun by the rest of us non-Tesla drivers. Yes, the pricing, I think, is very reasonable. It's more expensive than Tesla drivers pay. But I think it's still very reasonable. But what you get, which is a fast charge at a station where there are multiple plugs and you probably aren't going to have to wait. And it makes a lot of sense if Tesla can tap into some federal funds. They've been very, very good at that over the years from, you know, the early funds they got for the battery swap trials, state funds, incentives, all those kind of things. Tesla have been smart. Depending on whether you like the company or not is how you'll pitch that. They either made the most of it or whatever, but they really have made the most of those monies that are out there. And if now they can, even with their big cash pile that they have, if they can make some smart decisions there with allowing other people to use the supercharger network on the condition that they get some funding to build more chargers, it's really smart. It is the best thing about that company. It's one of the two best things. It's the speed at which they improve and iterate, and it's the charging network. Two best things, and it makes the question. I don't know if it's been answered in this article because I'm not scrolled down. Is how you'll implement that? So is V4 only CCS, or is V4 dual head, or is V4 with an adapter? I don't know if we have any answers to that yet.
I believe they have two separate cord for each style. So Tesla cord and CCS cord. I don't know.
That's what we did in the interim. Yeah. So when it was like a crossover period, we had superchargers with two cords, and now they just put the CCS in.
Oh, really? Now they just come with just CCS?
Yeah.
Okay.
So I wonder how the new stations will be. Would there be if this is what they're the plan to do? We still don't know if Tesla's going to produce an adapter. There was some talk about that early on, or if they're just going to do the CCS cables. But here's an interesting question: will they? I wonder if they would be forced to have all of the superchargers at a location have both cables, or would they do something like what Electrify America had done with Chatamo? You know, there's 10 stations and one has a CCS plug, and then they qualify for federal money, you know, and good luck getting that one station. You know, there'll be a queue of 10 cars waiting for it. So I wonder if they'll do that, or the adapter route would be interesting, because Tesla could basically charge whatever they want for that adapter. And, you know, make it for $100 and sell it for $800, let's say. So that's like $700 of profit towards charging. You know, that money could go into a pool to help further fuel or fund, you know, supercharger installations. So, you know, it would be interesting. You know, I mean, I think a lot of people would prefer the adapter route, because now you can use any supercharger, and even the ones that are legacy, that are in the ground. But we don't know yet if Tesla's going to go that route. It sounds like for sure they're going to have CCS plugs on some of their future superchargers. Will they retrofit old ones? Will they put them on all the stations? Will there be one at the end that sometimes doesn't work, like you find with Electrify America and CCS? I mean, Chatamo adapters, you know, that's going to be interesting to see how this plays out.
Hey, Kyle, have you charged up any CCS cars at Tesla superstations or superchargers while you're there?
Yep, we have a whole video on it already. We posted a few days ago, and on Out of Spec Reviews, and it worked really well, super easy. Just as Martin mentioned, we pulled up. That's where we saw the Imahari was doing this video, and so yeah, very very seamless, very good. And again, all the new version 3 chargers are just CCS here. So they actually made Model S and X owners go buy an adapter to use them, which I think is the right way to do it. It's just like, let's just go CCS and rock and roll. We'll see if Tesla changes the charge port in the US alongside all of this, because the, you know, I just got a new Model S and the charge port could definitely fit it now.
Okay. So that's interesting. So yeah, because it's just weird to think of Teslas without the Tesla connector, you know, and actually uses like the same thing that everybody else uses. That would simplify everything, but man.
Not in China. So if you want to sell a Tesla in China, you've got to fit a GBT plug on it. And Tesla will do what is the right thing to sell the most amount of cars. And as I don't know if you guys saw the report this week, I think it was an S&P Global Mobility study on brand loyalty. And there is there's like an equation to do with, you know, defection and that kind of stuff. And I think the three brands that were going up in the US in automotive was something like Maserati, Genesis, and Tesla. And the loyalty rate of Tesla was something like late 70% now, in terms of people have got multiple Teslas. They're never buying another one. You know, Tesla don't have to worry about annoying their drivers. They've got so much headroom in terms of saying, oh, hey, sorry, there's a new supercharger station, but you can't use that one because it's CCS only. And you know what? They'd come in for some stick, but they got nothing to worry about. Tesla's loyalty and brand loyalty is through the roof. If you own one, you love it, and they can put their drivers through a lot, and they might wriggle a bit, but they're not getting off the hook.
Yeah. No,
I was going to say one thing that's interesting to watch out for, in my opinion, people that are talking about, will Tesla switch to CCS like they have in Europe? Watch the Cybertruck, because if that Cybertruck launches with a Tesla adapter, with the Tesla connector, then they're never going to switch. This is their opportunity to begin a completely new vehicle that's being launched. This would be the vehicle that would be the first vehicle to do that, in my opinion. Kind of like in Europe, when Model 3 came out, they started putting the CCS adapter on it, or the CCS plug. It, you know, if Tesla has any intention of switching to CCS, and I don't know or believe that they do, but if they did have that intention, Cybertruck launch would be the time to begin the transition.
That's a very good point, Tom. That's why we have you on the show. You make all the smart points.
Once in a while, I say something that's relatively coherent.
That's great. Something to keep our eyes out for and something that we'll probably be seeing pretty soon.
I love that we barely got to the news Cybertruck this week.
So only like this, like still a year away from like now, yeah. Which is, oh, man.
I love it. A year from now, we still might be a year away, Dom. Let's see.
Oh, it could be.
Well, I mean, hopefully we'll probably have a chance to check out the plug before that, though.
Yeah. No, I think any pre-production you'd see, they'd make sure it showed. They would never show that, tip that hand.
Oh, yeah? You don't think? Okay.
I don't think so.
Okay.
I don't think they're going to switch, but I'm just saying, if they had plans in the future of transitioning, this would be the time to start it.
I see. Yeah, personally, I think, and I think you guys probably think the same thing, is that like everybody else should switch to the Tesla standard, but that also is not going to happen. So, yeah, we're stuck with two for a while, it looks like.
I know we've got to sign off, but before we go, I want to give a shout to Jim. Jim in the comments says, most of what you talk about, Chinese cars, dealer software updates, regen braking, not interesting to 95% of viewers. Jim, yeah, my friend, we can be friends, Jim. We can be, I like you. But let me help you out. So on your screen, you got your window you're watching. Now, if you look at the top right, then grab your mouse, move it to the top right. There's a little X there. You see that? Click it now. Click it now. Click it, Jim. Go away. This is what we do
British
for an hour and a half.
Throwing shade.
This is what we do for an hour and a half once a week.
Wait a minute. I'm getting a phone call. Wait a minute.
Is it Jim?
It's
I'm
Rivian.
Sorry, Jim.
Rivian. My truck's in?
Hey!
Really? Yeah, hell yeah, I want to pick it up.
Oh, no, we've upset Jim. And the Rivian's here
just
as well.
Just kidding. Oh. No Rivian. Okay.
Hey, so we're just about
now
out of time.
That would have been a setup if it happened 2 weeks
good.
In a row.
I would have liked that. That would have been good.
Would have been, yeah. All right, maybe
guys,
in a few months.
I think it's time out, Dom. The three of us are forcing you to end the show.
Yeah.
That's okay. It.
Yes. Well, I mean, on a little thumbnail, we didn't... We promised to mention we promised to mention production number. So let me just say real quick.
We can change the thumbnail. Just change the thumbnail. Just cross it out.
Tesla is
three of us. Let's just
up.
Walk off. All
there
three of us.
Yeah. All right. I actually do have to go though. So I will see you all later on. Thanks for watching.
Take care, Kyle. We'll catch you next week.
Bye-bye.
Bye everyone.
Jeez, you guys, like sinking ship and stuff. Okay, I just want to say that. So Rivian sold 4,401 vehicles. That's he's gone. R1T, R1S, and the big truck all together. Oh, he's back. He's showing us.
What's he got?
A Mulroney.
Oh, look at this.
I'm going to drive this guy now.
Right.
Okay.
Take care. Have
you going to do a range test?
Probably this weekend.
Okay.
I'm filibustering Dom.
Okay. Let me also just mention that while we're talking about the car deliveries. So 4,400 deliveries from Rivian for the quarter. It's still low, but they think they can hit that reduced production goal of 25,000 units. So they still need to step it up a bit to get to 2,000 a month to do that. And Tesla also, there's been a lot of like focus on Tesla because they've been having a lot of problems with the Chinese factory having shutdowns and just ongoing parts and issues here and there. Now they have like, I don't know, four factories producing cars. So there's issues everywhere, but they still managed to put out the 254,695 cars. So I'm not actually sure if that's down or not. I didn't have a chance to like to dig up the previous numbers.
310. So yeah, it's down. China down from 310. China was closed, but June was a record number, and they've already applied for planning permission to expand the Texas site. Tesla is not slowing down in any way.
Right. So nothing to worry about.
Yeah, Berlin isn't. Look, Berlin is not scaling as quick as they'd want it, I'm sure. No.
Right.
But Texas is, and so look. I saw an article this week about Ford and GM are coming for Tesla's launch by 2025. VW said this. You can argue that, but the numbers don't agree with you. Tesla will be number one in 2025 if they carry on at this rate. And they're like, oh, they're going to miss their 50% annual expansion rate. What, they get to 45%? Oh, boo-hoo. Like, Tesla are smashing it.
Right. So there was a story out this week about BYD selling more cars than Tesla. But But that was taken into that was counting like plug-in hybrids as electric vehicles, and so it's not actually they didn't actually sell more than electric vehicles than Tesla. It was like slightly more than half of BYD's cars are all electric, and they don't sell combustion cars anymore, so that's good. But yeah, so Tesla's still the all-out overall largest producer, I think, of EVs. It's still fair to say, and they'll be ramping up. And so I can't see, I don't know when anyone can approach what their output is right now, because they're, you know, they still have a huge amount of growth ahead of them. And that's, you know, and they could open up another gigafactory, say like India or South America or wherever, and you know, that's another 500 more whatever thousand cars a year. So Buddy mentions that VW grew 100% last year. What?
Well, that doesn't make sense. A low base.
Maybe their EV sales. Anyway, I think that brings us to the end of our show, though.
We're so over time.
Oh, we are too. Oh, I'm so sorry. So sorry, y'all. So that brings us to the end of our show. If you have any questions or comments, you can leave them on the Inside EVs forum podcast thread or on our YouTube or Twitch comment sections. If you like the show, please give us a thumbs up if you're watching us on YouTube. And don't forget, you can find and follow our panelists on Twitter. Follow Tom Logney at Tomalog. That's with two M's. Martin Lee is at EV News Daily. Kyle Connor is at It's Kyle Connor. And I'm at Dominic_Y. Click subscribe and tap that bell icon for notifications. And we'll see you all again next week. Ciao.